You know, the classic instructions or teachings for this mindfulness sati practice is the discourse on the four ways of establishing sati, Satipatthana Sutta. And it discusses a variety of different attentional faculties that we have. Capacities we have for what contributes to our ability to attend to our world, to our inner world. I just love that, at least in my little mind, that the word attention and attend are either directly related or close enough to be inspiring. That attention is a way of attending. And attending, I kind of have a fond feeling for. It's like it feels a bit like you're caring for something when you attend to it. And so we're attending. What are we attending to here in the present moment? What are we caring for? And I've met so many people who, as children, young children, were not seen or known for who they were. And it was kind of the equivalent of feeling that they weren't loved or lovable. And so I equate knowing and seeing as ways of loving. And so is it possible that what we're practicing here is learning a capacity to a care, to attend, to maybe even to love, in the awareness that we're cultivating and developing? And it doesn't have to be even intentional care, intentional loving. It just comes with the clarity, the simplicity of knowing, of being aware. And so when we're focusing on this first faculty, Pajapati, it might seem kind of cerebral, it might seem kind of intellectual to some people, cognitive. It might seem, even for some people, they say, oh, it's like being removed because you're in a word, perhaps, of recognition. But I see it more something very different. I see it as a vehicle for intimacy, for care, for love, it's just simply in its simplicity. And what we're trying to learn with developing our capacity to know or attend to is to see how simple we can make it be. And in that simplicity, something wonderful can begin happening. And among the wonderful things that can happen is we begin setting ourselves free from all the baggage that we're carrying, or all the restrictions that have been put on us by our life experiences. And something, the heart gets set free and can sing, and something can be released. And what a wonderful thing. If you love something, someone, you want them to be able to be free, to be themselves. So this knowing, this attending, caring. And so we're learning this. And so in this Satipatthana Sutta, there's a variety of different attentional capacities that are discussed or pointed to. And in the instructions for doing the practice there in that text, it begins with Pajapati, with knowing. And I just love how simple the knowing is there. As I talked about yesterday, when one's breathing in a long breath, one knows one's breathing in a long breath, long in breath, long out breath. I mean, it's almost insultingly simple. Like, you know, at least for me, I have a PhD in Buddhist studies, so All that study was for that purpose, so I could know the in-breath and the out-breath. And let me tell you instead the 108 true meanings of emptiness. But it's actually quite a profound thing to be able to let the knowing be so simple. And some of it's kind of maybe easier to understand when we realize how much reactivity and judgments and commentary and things that go along with knowing the world, attending to the world. It's not that often that it's simple. And so kind of discovering that simplicity and having enough patience to believe that it's worthwhile, because it can seem like there's important things to do with the mind and think and remember or plan. And just know that the length of an in-breath and an out-breath, I mean, like, give me a break. To know an itch, to know a sensation, to know a feeling, to know a sound. And as I said before, it isn't simply that we're getting to know things carefully, attending to things caringly, which is valuable, but it's also valuable that we're developing our capacity for knowing, discovering what this wonderful capacity is. And since I evoked all the different ways of emptiness, one of my favorite kind of little teachings about knowing, the cognitive functioning of emptiness. I just love that. And why I love it is that the emptiness somehow implies this radical simplicity of not inhabiting the world with self-assertion. It's not what we usually think of the self as the agent of acting in the world or being the victim of the world. Emptiness is kind of that which was without the self, but it's that natural, seemingly natural processing of our inner life and the mind. That's what it does. A bird that's healthy kind of naturally flies. A person who's alive kind of naturally breathes. In the same way, a person who's alive naturally will cognize, will know something. But to have that knowing freed from all the layers of reactivities and judgments is phenomenal. So this idea of cognitive functioning of emptiness, it's just like knowing set free. So it begins that, but then it goes on from there. And it lists a variety of different attentional faculties. And one of the things that's really great about this is different people are maybe their way their brain, their mind works. One of these attentional faculties is stronger, stronger suit than the others. It's like they say that some people are left-handed, some people are right-handed, and that's just how they were born. And nowadays, I think you're mostly allowed to be that way. There was a time when left-handed people weren't really allowed to be left-handed. And so there are people who have different handedness in the mind, right? And so there's some people who are like who think, and maybe their main way of understanding and seeing is through thoughts, words. Some people, it's mostly through seeing as their vehicle, and so the inner eye, they visualize, they process things with vision, with images. And so, to emphasize too much for those people, the use of words maybe is a little bit doesn't quite work for them. And then there's people for whom are somatic, or some people are kinesthetic, meaning what I mean by that is some people feel and process and even kind of like almost like they think through their bodies. That's how things are processed and understood. And then some people who really understand a lot of things really well if they can see someone else doing it. I have one son who was that way, and he had this amazing acute ability. I think he's a visual thinker in part. But he had an amazing ability to, when he was a little kid, to watch baseball pitchers pitch. And he would show us in the living room, "Let me show you how this one pitches and this one pitches." And, you know, if we started playing ping pong when he was a certain age, you know, father son bonding over ping pong, kind of. And but he was also competitive, so he wanted to beat me. So what he did is he went on YouTube and watched professional ping pong players. Watched them carefully, and then he came down and slaughtered me. So there's all these different ways that, you know, we understand the world, we take in the world. So in all these, you know, so there's a series of these different attentional faculties that are mentioned. And so sooner or later, the hope that everyone can find one that really works for them. So not to assume there's just one way. But maybe all of us have all of them a little bit, at least. You know, we're a mixture of all. It's not just completely one way. So hopefully, you know, it all works well enough and we find our way with it. So as it goes along here, when you get to the second instruction the Buddha gives, now he introduces a new attentional faculty. This is the one that's somatic. So if you're a kind of a body-based person, now you're home with this. And it has a very long Pali word, but it's actually kind of just two prefixes and a verb. And the verb is vedati, which means to feel or to experience, to sense. Sometimes people translate it as also to know, but it has very strong connotations of to feel and sense. And a related word, veda, sometimes in the Pali Suttas, it also means like sometimes knowledge or something. But it also can mean in spiritual inspiration, religious inspiration. You have Veda. So this wonderful kind of inspiration from the inside that wells up from the body and is felt more than maybe known, you know, cognitively. So it is to feel or to experience. And then the first prefix is sam vedati. And some just means a with. And so I think it's just, you really feel with what's happening. Like you're there to really feel with it. So you feel, but a little emphatic, like really be present for the feeling, in my reading of Pali. And then the next prefix is a word that we'll see again later, a prefix later called pati. And a pati is, if you go in the two grammar books, it just says that it's a reflexive prefix. And what that means is that it refers back on itself. And so it's referring back on the person who's feeling. So, you know, to really feel with the experience, it's really you're here, attending to hear what's here with yourself, in yourself. So I'm feeling the blow of the air conditioner on my face, and I could get all concerned, is that the right air conditioner, should have been different, and is that the right speed for a Dharma teacher to sit here, and I can get, you know, lost in that world. But to do this pati samvedati, to really feel it here, I feel the cool breeze, I feel it rubbing against my cheek, you know, I feel it kind of touching the warmth of my cheeks and the contact between the two, and it's kind of like, doesn't matter that it comes from an air conditioner. It's just, I'm really there, right there, feeling here for myself, with myself. What is this here? without getting lost in, you know, the source and why it's up there and, you know, all these things we can, our minds can do, to not get lost in the stories and the projections and the blame and the wanting, but to come back, to get always to this simplicity, to really feel the experience, sense it somatically. And so this is a very important part of Dharma practice. In fact, for Vipassana practice, being in the body is, you know, sensing through the body is one of the important ways that the Vipassana practice unfolds. Some of you have done Goenka practice where they do all this body scans. The Mahasi practice, which is kind of like the parent or grandparent for what we do here, they focus on mindfulness. We say in the West, mindfulness of breathing, it looks like that, but it's the movements of the belly as you breathe. And what you're really doing, what they're doing, is four elements meditation. They're feeling the sensations that come alive and move and shift and change in the belly as you happen to be moving. It's like when you sit still, that's the biggest movement in the body, is the breathing movements. So you enter into those movements and start feeling the pressure and the release of pressure, the smoothness, the harshness, the jaggedness sometimes of breathing, the smoothness of it, the tightness, the release of it, you know, all the different pieces of it. How the in-breath kind of also like comes like a wave, perhaps. It begins a little bit and then it gets stronger and then it fades away or comes to an end. And so you got to really start to. And so when I was in Burma, I had to report in great detail all the sensations that I could feel in those experiences of the belly moving as I breathed. That was and that worked really well for me because it was akin to what I did in Zen meditation, which was also being aware of. We call it the breathing in the belly, but this very embodied kind of practice being here. And so much of Buddha is being embodied. And also there's this very important teaching in their early texts that goes something like this. If you have direct contact with reality, which Lily Tomlin said is not such a great idea. Lily Tomlin, who's a comedian, said, reality is the leading cause for insanity for people who are in touch with it. So, but if we're, you know, we're trying to be sanely in touch with reality here, just present. But if you're in contact with here and now, the primary way in which we know it, maybe the only way we really know it, is through this thing called vedati, the experiencing it at the senses. So we have touch, we have eyesight, we have ears, tongue, smell, and then we have the mind, which is treated as a sense store, that it can sense the thoughts we have, the feelings we have, and things like that. The emotions we have. And the idea is that the felt sense experience of all these things is where the world begins for you. The experiential world that we live in did not begin when you were born, did not begin back at the Big Bang. And there's a certain kind of way in which it all begins here. And if you can be right there to at the experience of it all, you have a chance to begin seeing how you build your world, how you create it, how you start adding things on top of it. So I feel the cool breeze against my cheek, and it's just cool breeze. Or I can create a universe. Wow, That's a wonderful. That's like maybe a state-of-the-art air conditioner. Like, wow, I should have one of those at home. And who do I ask about what air conditioning it is and where's a good place to buy it? And I'll just buy it and I'll have my friends over and they'll think I'm really cool because I have a cool air conditioner and my status will go up in my neighborhood and I make sure I should put a big sign in my front yard saying I have an air conditioner. And pretty soon, it gets more and more elaborate, right? And as it does, I'm far removed from where it all began. Literally, before coming in here and having this silly thought for the Dharma talk, I had never had any thoughts like this around the air conditioner. No universes around the air conditioner ever was invented before for me. So you saw it being invented in front of your very eyes. So in a sense, we do that. But sometimes we're living in universes that were created a long time ago. Sometimes we neglect to show up here where it all begins. So I might leave here today and go back to my treehouse over there and start searching for air conditioners and thinking about them and daydreaming about how wonderful it's going to be. And I've kind of now inhabited a universe. And I might not notice any. I'm so caught up in that world of air conditioners. I don't even notice how I got back to the treehouse. How did I get here? I was here or there, and now, because I was in the world I had created. But if I just remember a little bit the mindfulness practice, then when I get down from the seat from teaching and head out for the steps, I might notice each step as it hits the. My feet hits the steps going down from here. It's just a step. Just a step. What air conditioner? Just a step. Oh, that's a nice carpet that I'm touching. Maybe I should get a carpet. And now I'm in a new one. So the advantage of kind of being right there at the sense doors to feel what's happening is you can, one is you can learn, it's another place to learn how simple you can be. And simple is caring, simple is love, I would like to propose. Just be as simple as you can. And then if, and also you can watch how you create a world out of it. Some of the worlds we create are completely fine to create. There's nothing wrong with certain worlds we inhabit for a while. But the amazing thing is we can watch it happen. We can kind of take responsibility a little bit for it. So for people, those of you who are going to work in the kitchen at some point during the retreat, you're actually joining a world that we've created already. It'd be nice if you participated in it. Don't just stay with the holding the knife and the carrots and just don't even know you have a carrot and a knife, just like, really kind of take in the fact that this is a little universe, a little world we've created, and it has certain rules and things to it. But you can make it really, really simple. And just be with it in a simple way. And as we try to do that, we see how we make it complicated. And then if you see that, you know that, then maybe you have a choice. Maybe you have a choice to continue the complications, or you have a choice to come back and be simple. In that process, what the Buddha emphasizes is that at some point, when you're close to the beginning of it all, you can see where the clinging is born. But if you're not near the beginning, you don't see the birth of the clinging. So I'm sitting with the air conditioner and I like it and it's pleasant and I want more of that pleasant, cool feeling. That's where the clinging is. So I start thinking about it and then thinking, well, what should I get? I should get a really good one and one that makes me an important person on my block. More clinging. And by the time I get back to the treehouse to look up air conditioners, I don't know. I don't even understand why I'm so obsessed about it, getting the right air conditioner. because I belong, because I didn't really notice the birth of the clingings that happen at the beginning. And they're just kind of acting on the momentum of this. So if you're able to be really simple and right here, right here, right here, then you can start seeing how this, the operating system for so much of what our life operates. It's a very powerful thing to do. But also with this feeling, experiencing it somatically, it provides a lot of information. I had a Zen teacher a long time ago who referred to the body as an antenna. It's a sensitive instrument that many of us, I would say, probably don't only use a portion of all the different, you know, capacities of attention, of sensing or feeling what's going on that we're capable of. And so as we begin feeling in the body, we start getting access to more information. And one of the sources of information that we have access to is that we're tense. We start feeling that the holding patterns, the tightness, the contractions in the muscles and how we hold ourselves. And that's important to know. So you feel it, and you know it. You know it, and you feel it. Sometimes more, it seems more valuable to feel it and just feel it somatically. Sometimes it's more useful to know it. What the knowing practice contributes, if you've really kind of learned how to do this knowing, is knowing by itself, in and of itself, does not interfere with anything, doesn't judge anything. It's the kind of very simple recognition of what something in and of itself without adding the layers of worlds we put on top of it. And so to learn this very simple way of just, oh, like this, serves really well when you start feeling the tensions in the body, what goes on in the body, because some of that's uncomfortable. It can be very painful sometimes. And so we're beginning to learn not to be reactive to that, to learn to be comfortable with discomfort, to learn to have some equanimity around it, to hold it in a nice way. And it's not a simple, because it's knowing and holding and sensing and feeling, can be, if it's done properly, done clearly and simply, a kind of love or care. Just simply holding what's going on in the body in awareness would be similar to someone who has a clenched hand and they can't unclench their hand because they're so beside themselves with upset. But then they have a friend who comes along and says, here, give me your hand. And they put their soft palm of their open hand and come from underneath and let you to rest your clenched hand in their palm. And that suddenly your attention is there in a way it wasn't before because your attention was on the upset. And you feel the support, the warmth, the care. And then probably the hands will begin to relax, soften and open in the way that maybe you couldn't yourself because the story of whatever was upsetting you was so big. And so it's that way, if we can really feel what's here, then something begins to shift and change. The Buddha said, your body is old karma. Your task is to feel it. So that's a fascinating idea. Your body is old karma. What does that mean? In these ancient teachings, they talk about the body in two different ways. On one hand, they talk about it as the corporal body. The word is sarira, that is the word that's used for a corpse. It's the corporal body is the body that's the body, independent of what's animated, is with awareness, with sensing, with consciousness. And then there's the kaya, K-A-Y-A, and that is the animated body. That's the body that gets animated and comes to life with all the things that the mind does, the nerves and everything. And the mind has a big impact on the body. And many times when we're feeling our body, we're not feeling the corporal body that we might think we are, but we're experiencing the legacy of the past. So if I feel my shoulders are really tense, that's old karma. Might be a new karma too. But you know, and so then, to feel that, and sometimes just to feel it relaxes. So in this instructions, in the Satipatthana Sutta, the second set of instructions, the second instruction is really feel with your sensations. Really kind of be with your experience of your body. But feel, experience, the usual translation in English is the bodily constructions. Sometimes they say bodily formations. And what this refers to, the formations, the constructions here, specifically refers to that part of your physical experience that has its genesis in what the mind does. So if the mind is afraid, and the shoulders go up, that's the mental formation. That's a bodily formation. And then this wonderful instructions that Buddha gives, you'll see tomorrow, the instructions are to relax. But that's for tomorrow. In the meantime, I just want to emphasize this value of this letting yourself feel the experience. Experience the experience. Sense it. Be with it. So it's not only knowing, which is such an important part of this, but starting to really know how things feel. Let the knowing take that in. So you're kind of both being somatic and in a certain kind of way cognitive. So when I was practicing in Burma, I got super curious about this and how my sensations and of the body, experience being in the body, would shift and change depending on what was happening around me. And I would kind of tune in to different places. One fascinating place was they had these torrential downpours that would happen just seemingly out of the blue. I would immediately shift my attention to what I was doing, to just now feel the body. What just changed? What were the sensations, the feelings in the body just changed with the changing humidity, the pressure, and all the different things that going on with this rain pour. Or I'd go into a room where someone was, like my teacher or different people, and I would see, like, what happens in my body in this new environment with these people there? What shifts and changes? What little muscles get tugged on, tighten up? What goes on here in this body? So to really feel, sense. The first really impactful instruction I received in Vipassana practice when I was first in Thailand. I got lots of instructions, but the one that really had an impact on me was I was listening to a Dharma talk by a teacher named the Buddhadasa. And he could speak enough English to give the Dharma talk. He probably gave a wonderful talk. I have no idea what he said at this point. And we were sitting outside, kind of a little amphitheater. And he finished, and thank you, and he was about to get up and go. And other people were starting to leave. And then he stopped, and he turned around, and he like had one more thing to say. And I think many people didn't hear it because they were already starting to go out. And he's been kind of sitting, kind of center. And he said, "Don't do anything that takes you out of your body." And I thought that was really strange. What? What does he mean by that? So then in the next days on the retreat, I started, this kind of went to me, what was he saying? What was that about? And then I started noticing how often I was not in my body. And the clearest place, the first place I saw it clearly was, I had to walk kind of through the property, the forest, down a hill to lunch. And lunch is kind of a big deal when you hardly eat, you know, one meal or two meals a day. I would be leaning forward towards lunch, and my sense of, I don't know what to call it, sense of self, sense of who I was, my sense of center of gravity was projected in front of me. And I said, "Oh, Gil, look, there it is. Don't leave your body." So then I would pull it back in. My center of gravity, whatever it is, that thing, the center of gravity, I don't know what it was, but okay, come back here. It would start again. I'd come back. It was like automatic, like, you know, the lunch is so important. So I got to see this kind of, how easy it was to not be in the body. And then I got to see it more and more. And I found how significant that teaching was, instruction. Don't do anything that takes you out of your body. And it's still a valuable teaching, because still I can feel how that happens. But on a retreat is a wonderful place to practice this. Stay close to your body. Know what's happening in your body. It's like you're a parent. Parents, keep your eye on your kid. You, and keep an eye on your body. But not with concern or caution or something that you're going to misbehave or whatever, but because it's so valuable. It is a form of care, of love, of attending, to really stay close in. Even if what you want to leave your body for, some thought, an idea that you kind of lose touch with what's happening here, might seem very important. Maybe the most important thing ever, because it's just a big problem. I'd like to suggest for this retreat, which I would like to say I really believe in, but I don't want to assert it that strongly to you, because you might have important things. Here on the retreat, the most important thing is stay close to your body. Don't leave your body. Know how you're experiencing this world and yourself through your body all the time. As much as you can. If you need to take a break, take a break. But you know, stay close, stay close, stay intimate. And then feel it. Let yourself really this somatically from the inside out. And this inside outness of this practice, feel from the senses, the sense endings you have in your body, the somatic experience of it all. You're experiencing, to some degree, you're experiencing there at the genesis, the beginning, prior to preferences, prior to wants and not wants, prior to creating conceptual light worlds that you add to on top of it. At the beginning, it's a very simple. In the process of perception. But, you know, it's hard to tease it all apart and really see how simple it is. But that's the direction we're going, to the simplicity. Simplicity of knowing, simplicity of somatic feeling, experiencing. Coming back. There's so many benefits to doing that. It's such a huge, important door for this Vipassana practice. It's also a tremendous support for developing real stability and concentration on retreat, because the alternative, more often than not, is to have a mind that's not really present for the experience. And if you're not present, it's hard to develop the stability and concentration. So, and I think of this body as kind of like the ballast. The more you can be grounded and rooted in your body, the more you have ballast, the more you're resilient, the more you can kind of like be transparent and let things wash through you or be pushed to the side, and then you come back like those. In Buddhism, it's this monk Bodhidharma. They have dolls in Asia, Bodhidharma dolls. Here in America, it's a clown, blow-up clown. And you push the clown, it has a round bottom. And you push it and it pops right up. There's some of the ballast, this come back to center, here in this body. So feeling, sensing, and knowing. Knowing and feeling. These are two of the attentional faculties at play when we do this practice. And some of you might find that the knowing that I've been emphasizing the first couple of days works really well for you. Some of you have said that. And maybe you want to, you know, continue along that line and maybe just add a little bit more emphasis on the body, and because that's one of the things you could know, the sensations. Some of you maybe didn't work so well as well, the knowing. It turns out that for you, you're more body-based. And so now you feel more at home, because now you can come back to the present moment over and over again and just feel your body. And that's the kind of foundation for doing the practice. And then you might find it very helpful to add a sprinkling of knowing with that. And the knowing is a little bit of a protection, because then you can kind of better track whether you're getting attached or clinging or resisting or how you're relating to it. So they're useful, these two together. And but then also, and I'll end shortly now, but it's very important. As I said, one of the purposes and values of this somatic experiencing is so we can become a heightened sensitivity to stress and tension. It really helps to become a world-class expert on tension and stress. But you're only going to become a world-class expert if you practice it. Not the stress part, but the noticing it, getting to know it. And then what happens is you get more and more subtle, and you start seeing the subtlety of it and how it works. You start seeing it before it builds up. And then you can kind of do a course correction early. You can let go of something that you're holding on to. And the stress levels don't build. And in relationship to how you do the mindfulness practice, meditate, if with this heightened sensitivity to the body, you might also become more sensitive to how you're practicing in a stressful way. How you're straining to get concentrated, or how you're pushing to make something happen, or prevent something from happening, or get rid of something. So many different little ways in which people strain or push or tighten up in this practice, which isn't really not helpful for this practice. So the more sensitive we are to all the little ways in which we stress, easier it is to kind of find a balanced, simple way. And it's easier it is to come to this. I think some of the ways in which this awareness practice is love and care. The more you're stressed, the more tension there is. I suspect there's a kind of, you can probably make a beautiful equation that shows, you know, the more stress, the less love. The more love, less stress. Wouldn't that be nice? So you have that wonderful equation and you choose what to do. So patti samvediti. To really feel what's happening, being with it, really, really be with your sensations and hear. Stay close. Stay really close to yourself, to your body. Let your body be the guide, the support, the foundation for doing this practice. So it's such a second nature for me to do this. So I sit quietly a little bit after giving the talk, and I can see, feel immediately the residue in my body that I have a little bit from giving the talk, trying to make myself understood, and I can feel little pulls in my cheek and a little bit in my belly, and that's, you know, oh, look at that. So then I sit and it's good to know it's there, and it's going to be there. It's good to know it's there, and then I can feel that in the knowing of it, it just begins to, feeling it, knowing it, it has a chance to kind of settle. So thank you all very much.